Welcome to East Meets West, episode 218. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I am Roger Chang.
Joining us today, all the way from Paris, France, is Patrick Beja, or in some countries, Beja.
This is going to be a show about French stuff, isn't it?
I don't know. We just never know. We were having a very good conversation about music right before we started here, and I wanted to capture it because you're claiming that our East Meets West theme song is of some sort of French connection. La French
it
connection.
Is, actually, yes.
So was it, so explain what you were trying to tell us.
Well, the original, if I can find it somewhere, is a French song from a goofy pop singer from the 80s, I would say. It's very clearly a cover of that.
No.
I can't remember which song.
And when I say no, I spell it N-O-N. the song at the beginning of East Meets West is Balsara and his singing sitars covering Yummy, Yummy, Yummy. And that song is from the 60s. So it can't be a cover of a French song from the 80s, so unless time travel is somehow involved.
So what you're saying is that you're actually up-carring me and telling me that the song I'm thinking was the original was actually a cover from that original song in the 60s.
Possibly, because Yummy 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 was made popular. I shouldn't say first put out, because I'm not sure. It was made popular by Ohio Express, as Roger said, in 1968. Written by Arthur Resnick and Joey Levine.
With such profound lyrics like, love, you're such a sweet thing, good enough to eat thing, and it's just a what I'm gonna do.
Balsara and his singing sitars, on the other hand, we know much less about. Except I just happen to have an LP of their music.
Tom was in a sitar phase of his life when he was a radio DJ. Many, many years
ago. I was a sitar phase of my life when we started East Meets West many, many years ago.
Well, you know, I'm still right.
Actually, I just created digital versions of the LP.
Well, to get our audience up to speed, so before the show, we were Patrick was enlightening us to the fact that the A-Team in the French version of the television show, they actually had a song for the opening music, instead of just, unlike the American version, which is just the music and a simple narration, this was, you know, a full chorus song.
And I'm gonna say this only to make Patrick laugh. It's called L'Agence Tout Risque.
Oh, that's not too bad. See, last time I laughed at you when you spoke French, you scolded me for it. So now I can't be honest anymore.
No, yeah, but that's not very French of you. You're supposed to laugh at me anyway. You laugh at my scolding you.
It's very strange, actually. We had translated titles for all the TV shows, and we actually had songs introducing all of them, not just the A-Team. Dallas had a song. Knight Rider had a song. They all did.
Knight Rider
it's
had
pretty
a song.
Strange.
What was the name of Knight Rider in French?
K2000.
Which is?
Cat of the Mile.
The
A2000. It's like, you know, this whole 2000 thing when 2000 was far away. So anything with 2000 sounded super futuristic.
Wait, isn't Cat 4, though?
I'm not sure. I just know it as K2000.
Wasn't K2000, well, not Cat. I thought you said Cat. Like
Cat.
Mm,
you meant
now
to say
I'm confused.
So it's K2000.
Although, what did they do when there was a Knight Rider 2000? Because there was a one-off television movie called Knight Rider 2000.
Well, was it a one-off or was it the kickoff of the reboot of the series?
No.
Well, you're talking about something else.
This is after the series ended, and David Hasselhoff came back to claim even more money to do a single pilot that might have gone into a bigger series. But it's called Knight Rider 2000 and featured Kit in a Pontiac concept car
body. What?
And a Pontiac concept car body.
Blasphemy.
And, you know, brought back a few people to kind of, you know, pepper the cast so it felt familiar. But it was a pretty bad show. And then they took it one more step. And then they took the Knight Rider concept and got rid of David Hasselhoff completely. And then it became a team of vehicles that were all Ford. So there was a Ford truck, a Ford Mustang, a Ford Expedition and all that. And they flew around in this huge cargo plane. To instead of the truck, semi-truck, it was a plane, and it was CG'd. And they would be dropped off. All the cars could talk, and they were intelligent.
If they can transform into giant robots, I'm sold.
No, that was a sad thing. They had one that was a motorcycle, but the two motorcycles would form together to form a car, which seemed kind of useless to me. But that to suffice to say, that didn't last past a season, I don't think.
A season, though? It made it a season?
Yeah, but it was syndicated season, so it's, you know.
Okay.
It wasn't that great.
Not a human season, a dog season.
Maybe 13 episodes or something. Yeah.
So getting back to L'Agence du Risque, what does that mean in English?
It means the all-encompassing insurance policy, basically, which is...
So the plot was a little different. It was about insurance agents fighting to clear your name at reasonable prices.
Really, if you think about it...
That's, if you can find them.
If you can find them. Hey, you know what? If I could get that and have my name cleared up with the government...
If you can find them and you have no pre-existing conditions, maybe you can get help from the wide-ranging insurance agents.
So you were telling us that Bay Baracus, Mr. T, was Barracuda. What were the other names for the various characters? Were they...
So Murdoch was Looping... And again, I only learned this when I saw the movie a few weeks ago. I was convinced that he was called Looping in the original show.
Face is that Man, like is, the, is, that, is that like a crazy name, Lupin?
I guess a little bit. I mean, now the name Looping is so associated with that character that it does sound kind of crazy. Okay. But I'm not even sure it is.
Well, like, loopy means you're crazy.
Yeah.
And that actually, I think, derives from, you know, the wolf.
Lupus.
The lupus, which is, you know, howling at the moon and being crazy and full moon making you crazy and all that. So I didn't know if there was some undertone there or if it's just random.
No, I think it's just he is the pilot, so he does looping.
Oh, I see.
Loopings.
All right. And then Face?
Face is, I can't remember.
Foss? Fosse.
It must be something like it was something like Bogus, which would be, you know, face or good looking one, or can't remember.
Handsome guy, like handsome Rob from
Handsome dude, something like that. Bon. I can't remember. But then, I think his name obviously was different also. He wouldn't be, you know, Face in French, or Face, or Village, or Tête, or it would just be ridiculous.
So wait a minute, as a French viewer, when you saw in the opening credits the Cylon walk by Dirk Benedict, did you make the connection that, yeah, that was from a previous series he used to be in? Or is that just
getting the connection now.
You never noticed that?
The big silver robot that walks by Dirk Benedict when they're giving all the name in the credits? Or do they have a completely different video opening too for the French version?
It might be a different opening, but I wasn't big on Galactica back then, so I'm not even sure I remember the opening credits the way it was. I never noticed, basically.
Okay.
But we had Galactica here too, so it would make sense. I don't know, there was a song for Galactica though.
That would have been cool. Battlestar Galactica song? Would it be as poppy though? Because it was actually a very somber show. It wasn't exactly like highfalutin, high fives everywhere.
That I was think Buck they Rogers. Should have songs today everywhere for the new shows too.
Oh, do you like, have like 90210?
Lost.
Yeah, Lost. That's
Heroes.
Lost Dexter.
There's a song for Dexter?
The Wire?
Oh, there isn't. They
actually, The Wire has a song.
What I'm saying is they should bring that back, and in English, like a song for Dexter, that would be awesome.
Now, what about Colonel Hannibal Smith? That seems like a name you'd want to keep.
Is that they changed? He was just Hannibal, I think.
Hannibal. Hannibal. But the point of all this was that they took the A-Team theme that we are familiar with in the United States, that was just instrumental, and they added words.
Yeah.
And so that's what you're saying they do all the time, is they add words to the song. What are the freaking words? I make up words to the A-Team song. It's kind of a deal that me and some of my friends do just as a joke.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
The thing is, so just to be clear, we're not doing that anymore. It stopped a while ago. So
it was a phase.
We don't have. Yeah.
You don't add the words anymore. Okay.
But yeah, the song would pretty much more or less explain vein what the series was about. Maybe there was a feeling of that was introducing new viewers to what the show was, I think. I'm not even sure. I mean, it sounded silly even back then. But maybe they also thought, you know, if you give a song, people are going to be singing it or humming it, and it's going to give more popularity to the show. I have no idea. I mean, French guys already are bad. But French guys from the 80s, what do you want to, you know, we don't know what they were thinking.
Oh, it says here in Wikipedia that Face was called Futé.
Futé, you're right.
Is that it?
That's clever. I mean, that's actually what it means. It means clever. It's not that it's a clever
name. Oh, so he's the con. Well, he technically is kind of the con guy.
So what? I'm trying to find the words to the song because I want to know what they were saying.
So they were saying things like "L'agence touriste qui est vraiment la dernière chance au dernier moment," which would be. the A-Team is really your last chance at the last minute, and stuff like that. Like, it's describing sort of the ambiance of the show.
I want someone to translate and then sing it in English as a cover. I really do. I will buy that.
You know, I'm wondering if they... So then what did you do for, like... I guess you just rewrite new lyrics for American sitcoms. Like, you know, Growing Pains, they all, like, you know, Family Ties, they all had, you know, song openings to it.
Sure. Yeah, we just rewrote all of that.
You rewrote the facts of life? How would you rewrite the facts of life? You take the good, and then you take the bad, you take them both.
Well, you have to, I know. It's sometimes that it doesn't translate directly, and so you gotta mess with the words a little.
Yeah, and you know, we did that a lot better back then, because today we're sort of hell-bent on translating things in a literal word-for-word way. I remember a Gillette slogan, I think. What was the big Gillette slogan back in the 90s or late 80s? Do you guys remember what the closest what it was?
Was it as
be all a man can be, or something like this.
Wait, isn't that the army? Be all you can be.
Yeah. Well, it's either Gillette or the army, but they translated
Gillette's
it
the in, best a man can get.
That's it. Yeah.
Right. Okay. And they translated it in French, la perfection au masculin, which means a, you know, man's perfection, kind of. It's not an exact translation, but it works. And today they would translate it as, you know, exactly the best a man can get, and it sort of sounds weird. What I'm trying to say is translation now doesn't really account for the message that the original sentence is trying to convey. It's really about translating things word for word, and I really think it doesn't work. It's lazy, and it's not good.
I'm reading somebody in the chat room posted a link to the translation of the A-Team song from France. It makes no damn sense at all.
So do you want to sing it anyway?
The All Risks Agency. It's really the last chance at the last moment. The bad tricks of the thugs. The agency settled their cash. If the injustice waits for you, the All Risk Agency waits for it at the corner. Is this Google Translate?
It probably is, because the thing is, it's a bunch of stupid play on words in French, and obviously when you translate them, they do not
make any sense.
Well, it's you know, I mean, just translations in general. I mean, oftentimes now the translation isn't, as you were saying, Patrick, word for word. It's just as long as the same meaning is carried over. I was watching The Girl Who Played with Fire yesterday, which is a follow up to The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Both, you know, it's a Swedish movie and English subtitles, and there are parts of it I was wondering, you know, because literally the subtitle had the other character's dialogue even before he spoke it. So I'm wondering if, you know, they're basically speaking more sentences than there were lines on the screen. I'm wondering what exactly was said. I'm not sure if you ever watched the movie Lost in Translation with Bill Murray and
Scarlett Johansson.
And there's a point where Bill Murray is doing this ad for Suntory, and the director there is like basically explaining for him what to do, and, you know, he's saying everything in Japanese, and this translator says to him, it's like, more intensity, and then the director goes off and spends like 5 minutes, and the translator looks at Bill Murray, more intensity. And I you know, I didn't find out what it meant until I asked my girlfriend, who was very fluent at the time in Japanese. And she said basically what he was saying was, you know, you want to be like this actor where in this movie where he was doing this, you know, that kind of feeling. And, you know, the translator just kind of looked at him and was like, more intensity.
More intensity.
Yeah. So I think it's just...
Well, it's an old joke. Looney Tunes did that joke way back in the 40s where, you know, they'd have someone... Oh, yeah. Pretend to be speaking some island, Pacific Island language, and then it would get translated as, you know, one word. And then, like, and then they'd reverse it where somebody would say a lot of stuff in English and it would get translated into the island, like the fake island language into one word.
It's, it, in Japan, I've lived in Japan for a little bit, and there is a little bit of that happening, though. It's kind of eerie. Sometimes you get one word and explain it in English. I don't know if it's specifically Japanese, but you do have words that cannot, that convey concepts that do not work in another language. And there's a lot of it in Japan. It's so alien to, you know, the way the society was brought up. Create concepts that are very difficult to explain one word in Japanese or translate, or, I mean, in English.
Well, I think that's true of a lot of languages, because it's not even that they have foreign concepts, but some languages are just constructed differently. For instance, in Russian, there is chodit and idti. Those are two verbs for to go. But chadit is to walk around by foot in sort of without a particular direction. Iti is to walk on foot in a particular direction. And you have different verbs if it's involving getting into a moving vehicle and going, and whether it's in a particular direction or just without direction. So when you walk around town, you'd use chadit. When you go to the bus, walk to the bus, it's iti. And so when you translate those, you have to translate that subtext of, like, you know, and it turns that one word into walking around aimlessly to the shopping district. Yeah.
My girlfriend was telling me that in Swedish, they have two words for being sick. You have the one where you're just a little bit sick, but you can still go to work. And the one where you're really sick, you have to go to, you know, the doctor. She was telling me that basically all French people are considered lazy because when you're sick, you go to the doctor and there's only one version. So that was also sort of weird. And
we're lazy judgmental. Here too. Yeah.
Speak for yourself.
I do. And for you. All Americans are lazy.
Especially the ones that do podcasts.
Especially the ones who get sick.
I'm going to stay very quiet now talking about laziness.
I have a question for you regarding the French intros that Curtis B brought up in the chat room, and I think it's a good one. Star Trek. Did they, which actually lyrics were written for the Star Trek theme, but they weren't used in the US. Did they have lyrics in the Star Trek theme in France?
I don't think they did, but I'm such a bad Trekkie or Trekker. Either way, I'm not really into it. I don't even know that.
The only ones I've ever heard came out of Jack Black's mouth many, many years ago.
Which were... Oh, he just made them up, though.
Yeah, I'm not sure. See, that's the thing. I never realized that there were. So.
Well, here, do you remember them? Because I've got the actual lyrics on my screen here.
I probably... Probably if you spoke them, and then I can say it sounds familiar enough to what you said.
Beyond the rim of the starlight, my love is wandering in starflight. I know he'll find in star-clustered reaches love, strange love, a star woman teaches.
No?
And it doesn't sound like something Jack Black would say. So I think he was just making them up. Mm-hmm. But those are the actual lyrics written for the Star Trek song.
Although I should say Tenacious D. Because it was two of them, not
it was two. It was actually Tenacious D. Well, yeah. Then, yeah, of course, they just made up their own. And they were probably a whole lot better than the actual words, I'm guessing.
Maybe. it's very curious. Now I'm eager to actually go online later on and just find out a bunch of non-English versions of familiar shows.
Well, and then there's the remakes. In fact, Turkey and India and even Russia are famous... And we've talked about this before on East Meets West for kind of just doing shows again, like in their own, they're just essentially ripping them off.
Well, yeah, so Turkey went through a phase where it was heavily influenced by Italian films or the way they were produced in the late 60s, 70s. So they made their version of, believe it or not, they had their own version of Star Trek. They had their own version of Superman. They had their own version of Captain.
Oh, you mean remaking the whole show?
Yeah. Soup to nuts.
Wow.
And they had their own variation of Batman, and then they had one with like weird Spider-Man, and it was just weird because they basically took all these what they thought were action heroes and they just gave it a very Turkish spin, but it felt like an Italian movie done in Turkish because that's what their influence was.
Now, how does that different? And Web9342 asked this question: how is that different from the U.S. taking British shows and just remaking them, like The Office, for instance?
In the cases of those particular Turkish films, they made it because one thing in when you take an American or British show, I guess there are a few cultural adjustments you make to the show in certain aspects. But generally, if you saw it, you would say, "Hey, that's just an American version of, you know, a British show." If you saw this movie and you didn't see the lead character in it, you wouldn't get an understanding of the movie until, like, why is there a Captain America, you know, beating a bunch of guys in lab coats? You know what I mean? It's just like, you know, hey, there's a familiar character in a very unfamiliar setting.
Well, my favorite is the Star Wars, where they actually use bits of the movie Star Wars for their special effects.
Hey, why reinvent the wheel?
Exactly. But then it's cut in with, you know, Turkish guys changing the plot up. It's not exactly the same story.
The Turkish Star Trek is actually a hoot. I was watching that, and it's like, you know what? If they had enough money and budget to keep it going, I think that show would have been a really good series. And then people could say, hey, why don't we, you know, re-import the Turkish Star Trek and Americanize it.
And remake it. So these were legal remakes, or?
I don't know. I don't know if copyright laws at that time extended beyond the border of a country. So, you know, it's very interesting because, you know, you see a lot of very familiar shows and concepts, you know, popping up if you look at film history. But, you know, I don't know if there was any exchange of money or kind of legal notices between studios, between like a foreign studio and say like a Hollywood studio.
I would guess not, but.
But, you know, hey, you know what? It's long past and you have these little gems to watch on YouTube.
All right, well, let's get to some comments from the blog, because we talked about homeschooling last week with Brian Brushwood, and we got a lot of good stuff. I want to start with Cool B, longtime listener of the show, who I think kind of summed up a good listing of the benefits of being homeschooled. He says he was homeschooled from fifth grade on. He was in the gifted program in public school, and during a parent-teacher conference during fourth grade, his teacher said to my parents that they didn't feel the public system would be able to properly challenge me, so they suggested either homeschooling or private school. Private school being more expensive, parents decided to go with homeschooling. As for the socialization issues, I was in Cub and Boy Scouts from before I left public school, and my best friend's family also decided to homeschool me or homeschool around the same time. Plus, my parents also joined a homeschool co-op, which helped with teaching some subjects they weren't sure on. Often when we planned a trip, we'd incorporate the schooling into it. For example, one year we were going to Philadelphia, so leading up to the trip, we studied the history of the area so that when we got there, the stuff we saw and experienced had more meaning.
Cool. Sorry, Patrick.
Oh, I just want to say that I wasn't sure I agreed with Brian about his reasons for homeschooling. But aside from that, I might have had issues with homeschooling maybe 20 years ago, but today there is definitely socialization and knowledge of the world kind of through the internet. So even if you are homeschooled, it's not like you're going to come out this weird kid that has never seen anything. You can absolutely have knowledge of what's happening around you and be connected with your generation because of this, you know, tool. So why not?
You know, and to be honest, I don't think that the socialization issue is, because I used to know a kid who used to get literally bounced around between schools because his parents, or at least his dad, had a job that required move every 3 years. So, I mean, after 3 years, he had to make a new set of friends because he was always on the move. And, you know, he had a set of good friends at the end of that, but, I mean, didn't necessarily require him being in a specific area for like 18 years to build it up.
Brian 1625 wrote, in a more homeschooled society, a child would almost be a social carbon copy of their parents. Racial and religious segregation could be a problem in a society with choice, perhaps creating new classes, stereotypes of individuals. In other words, public schools have helped end racism through generations of class mingling. I wonder what other social stereotypes would we prop up by not mingling with other cultures. The melting pot has been credited for America's leadership in innovation. I actually agree with Brian Brushwood. The above is just a thought.
I would immediately say BS to all that, having been in both. Having been in a very mixed school, what I've discovered is everyone actually self-segregates, not only along ethnic, but also socioeconomic. There's my friend I used to know from kindergarten. You know, I group with him. I don't think it would be any worse or any less than if that child came from a household that already had those points of view. They would go to a public school. I don't think their points of view would suddenly miraculously change 180, because their consistent environment is the home, not school.
Well, and in a lot of cases, schools aren't necessarily mixed. All the rich people take their kids and put them in private schools, or move to neighborhoods with better schools that you can't afford to live in, or maybe a school in a poor neighborhood is one that you've moved away from because you don't want to be involved. So class mingling, I think, actually happens even less than you might think. Yeah. Whereas in homeschooling, it's up to the parent. The parent can choose to seek out people with different backgrounds to mingle with. So there could be another side there.
You're going a little bit far here, Tom. I definitely think that people end up with their parents, you know, opinions anyway. That's certainly my experience, and for the people around me. But saying that homeschooling actually is better for challenging your opinions is a little
extreme. I disagree with. I don't think it's better or worse. I think it's the same, because your positions, your belief system are so influenced. I'm sorry, I keep hitting this. Is so influenced by the people that you're around the most, which for most kids would be their parents, their immediate family.
Agreed.
Well, I think John Bradley's comment kind of is appropriate here. He says, parents taking responsibility for their children's education is the most important aspect of choice in education, private, public, or home. You cannot outsource the raising of your children to any institution, church, or school. Be engaged, demand and expect the best from the educators, and hold them accountable. Without parent engagement, good public schools are not a guarantee of anything other than perhaps better resale comps on your home.
It's actually very insightful. My high school, so when I moved to Modesto and went to high school, my freshman year was pretty much like 90% white. Now, the school district at the time wanted to rebalance all the student load so they'd be a little more mixed. So the sophomore year, it suddenly became like 65% Hispanic. I did not see any increase in social mingling between various ethnic or social groups. But what I did notice was that the parents that took the time to come to school activities, events, and stuff, tended to have kids that were more open-minded, perform a lot better in school academically, sports, or any extracurricular activity. And I think kind of hits on what John is saying, is that if parents take the initiative, they put the effort, they put the energy. In many cases, you know, these parents that I'm talking about were working class, blue collar people. They weren't, you know, doctors or lawyers or anything. But what they had was a desire to see their children better off than they were. And they, you know, they went to extent of, yeah, you know, I'll be the chaperone, or, you know, I'll drive the kids from practice, or, you know, I'll help with A, B, C, or D. And I really think that, you know, there's this expectation that school is kind of a huge nursery for kids, where you leave them and you hope something good happens while they're at school and they come back to you at the end of the day. And I think, you know, education and raising of a, you know, child is something you need to do, you know, consciously and actively.
So if everyone seems to agree that homeschooling is actually not an issue, did it become not an issue now, or is the stigma of, you know, homeschooling, you know, sort of fantasy imagined by Hollywood or something?
I think there's a variety of factors. One is homeschooling has traditionally, initially when I've heard about homeschooling back when I was in junior high, it was mainly from parents who were former, I don't want to kind of paint people in particular, but hippies. You know, they didn't think that.
What's odd about that is when I heard about people being homeschooled growing up in Southern Illinois, it was always people in a fundamentalist Christian area. It was only people who, you know, wanted to sort of indoctrinate their kids in their own beliefs and didn't trust the schools, thought they were going to morally undermine them. So in different areas of the country, I think you had different, different niches pushing for homeschooling.
And then I think people took their personal or particular anecdotes and they kind of extrapolated, assumed everyone was like that. So they said, well, the only people who can be homeschooling are fundamentalists or hippies or crazy people or something. And that's not the case. I mean, clearly not the case, but there's also issues surrounding, how do you test these kids? Will they become socialized? There's so many, factors that are involved with any kind of bureaucracy, especially the education system, in the US, which is a huge bureaucracy. There are so many conflicting interests. And so you have all these arguments for and against.
Yeah, I mean, I think the issues with homeschooling are like the issues in public schooling or the issues in private schooling. Cost, time, and quality.
Exactly.
And it's going to vary by school and it's going to vary by parent. And you know what? A fundamentalist Christian who wants to homeschool their kids and teaches them really good science and math is not doing any different than they would if they sent them to a really good school and continued to teach them, the religious side of education at home. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. On the other side, someone who can't afford to homeschool, who doesn't have the time to homeschool, and is stuck in a public school, and they're not allowed to send their kid anywhere else, I think there is something wrong with that. So I don't think homeschool is the solution to anything, but I don't think I think we should get past the idea that homeschooling is this weird thing that only weird people do. I think it's a good option. It's not a good option for everyone.
It's an option.
But it is an option. And I think we need to consider more options. And I'm all for public schools. I think we can fix public schools. I think public schools need to be held just as accountable as we're talking about with homeschools. You need to have quality educators and you need to have good curriculum and they need to be affordable and accessible by everyone.
I agree with everything you're saying. However, there is the issue, or the question rather, of socialization, which is, I don't know if it's, whether or not it disappeared with homeschooling is another matter, but that's certainly a question that is worth asking. And you're sort of pretending like it doesn't happen, homeschooling and public or private education is the same in all respects. I think the issue of socialization does exist with homeschooling.
Yes, but I don't think that's in all cases of homeschooling. And even if there's a significant percentage, it's kind of one of those things where you don't want to toss the baby out with the bathwater. Just because it doesn't work in one situation doesn't mean it doesn't work at all. And the socialization issue is can work both ways. I mean, you can have kids in a school that are constantly being harried, bullied, to the point where they, they either become very introverted or worse yet, they think of committing, some sort of violent act or even worse, suicide. And, those things do happen. And, when they do happen, they get reported. For example, there was that case out in, I think it was in Vermont or New Hampshire. There was a girl that moved from Ireland and she was literally bullied 24/7 by a group of classmates that wouldn't leave her alone. It, attacked her on Facebook, email, cell phone, at school. So, it can be a bad thing. It can be a good thing. It's one of those things where I think you need to look at in a specific case.
I have to say that my secret thought about all of this, though, is that really it doesn't matter nearly as much as we think it does. That your family, the class you're born into, and the connections of your family are much more important in how you turn out than how you are educated. And there's some correlating factors that, if you don't have as many connections, you're probably not getting into as good of a school that are hard to tease out of that situation. But some really smart people have come from some really bad schools, and some really dumb people have come from some really good schools. So
on to get really good jobs, even though they're not qualified.
Yeah. So it's not that it's not important, but, you can start to get a little tunnel vision when you talk about these things. Let's get back to the A-team. No, I think we're done. Patrick Beja, thank you so much. Let the fine folks of the internet know where they can find more of what you do.
You can follow me on Twitter or Facebook. I'm not Patrick on both. And you can also find lots of shows I do in French at nowatch.fm.
And Roger Chang, what about you?
Oh, if you want, you can follow me on Twitter at Jolly Roger, J-O-L-L-Y, Roger. And, of course, you can catch Revision 3 and watch my two shows that I produce, but not necessarily on, HD Nation and Techzilla.
Jammer B, do you have anything you want to plug?
I do not. Just keep watching Twit.
You can follow him on Twitter, though. He's Jammer B. I mean, that's pretty easy to guess, but just so you know. Thanks to Jammer B for producing the show. Thanks to Leo for letting us do East Meets West on Twit every Sunday live at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern time. Thanks again to Patrick for being on the show. And thanks most of all to y'all for listening or watching. We'll see you next time.
All right. Bye.
Bye. Agence touriste.
Le roi ne peut plus rien pour vous. Il vous reste un recours, un seul, l'agence touriste.
L'agence touriste, c'est vraiment la dernière chance, au dernier moment, les mauvais coups, c'est truand. L'agence des règles au canton.
L'agence touriste.